Folks, hello. Let's Talk Ed. This week, Chris and I are continuing our conversation and perhaps a little bit of our rant with regard to the promise of college. But this week, we're talking in particular about the promise of college for the ones who need it the most. And in the first segment, Chris, we talked about the various groups, and we talked about, you summed it up nicely at the end by talking about the fact that we need to individualize higher education in order to meet each student where they are and whatever their difficulty is. So, Chris, can you please lead us with a conversation with regard to the needs that those students have? Because this is a very important issue, and we can't sweep it under the rug no more.
Yeah, you know, we talk about all of these different groups. So let's just, for example, take non-traditional students. And what we need to do to attract them to our colleges and then make sure that they're successful once they get there. And they're going to come with a different set of needs, because the non-traditional students, typically you're talking about someone who has already established themselves in life in some way, shape, or form. So they may have a family, they may have a job. So, you know, suddenly you're faced with a couple of things that we've talked about, you know, scheduling, for example. How do we make sure that our schedules are flexible enough for someone who may have that 9-to-5 shift work type job, whatever it may be? And if all of our classes are meeting from 8 to noon, and, you know, how are we going to make sure they can get into the classes that they need? If they have children, does the college have any kind of a childcare option available for them? Are instructors going to be flexible enough that if that child gets sick or, you know, has some other kind of need that you have to address now as a parent, are your instructors going to be very rigid and say, you know, our class is our class, and if you're not there, tough luck? Or are they going to be reasonable that, hey, my kid's got the flu, you need to go take care of them? So, you know, some of that can be done through training. Mm-hmm. Some of that obviously requires some, you know, other kinds of infrastructure. And, you know, you also talk about, you know, how do you make sure that they can see advisors or, you know, get into the library or anything like that? And, you know, that's where it starts to become more of an infrastructure kind of thing.
Right. And in the next segment, we're going to be talking about recommendations for solutions, as Loki is harassing you and attacking you. I think, and we talked about when you said we like monolithic problems with monolithic solutions. It's an excellent point, because for some reason in higher education, we are very much of the mindset that, you know, the greatest good for the greatest number. And the idea that, well, I went through college, and when I went there, you know, all of those stories that we hear. So the student needs to buck up. Yeah, but then doesn't matter. We had those issues when you and I were students. We had those issues before us. We had those issues even before. So let's stop kidding ourselves that this is this generation or you know, they're lazy, they play computer games, and they surf the internet. There is no evidence that younger Americans, the Gen Z in particular, and the ones who follow them, are not working as hard as prior generations. And I'm going to say even further that we are not leaving them with the rosy future that was potentially presented to many of us as, in our case, Gen X individual, let alone our parents' generations. So again, this is not intended to bring down other groups, but this is intended to highlight the fact that you can't compare when you and I went to college, the cost of education was significantly lower, even in comparison to the cost of living. And things have escalated dramatically in the 21st century. At the same time, I do not believe that the cost of the faculty and staff salaries have gone up so tremendously. So what has been the cost? That's the question. And that's what affects our students. Yes, we can give them scholarships on top of financial aid, but what are we doing for them as individuals?
Yeah, and, you know, as you mentioned scholarships, I was just in on a conversation here about a scholarship the other day that was like a $200 scholarship. And, you know, at this point in time, that may not even buy a single book, let alone books for a semester or a year. Like, you may not even be able to get a single book for that. And I don't care what population you're in, like that kind of scholarship. Yes, it's one more thing. It's money, certainly. But how much good is that actually doing a student? Is that going to be the make or break for a student to go to college or not go to college? It's really hard institutionally, big picture, to start looking at that individual need. But the funny thing is, too, we do remember those unique situations. You know, advising remembers the unique advising situations. Financial aid is going to remember the person that, you know, qualifies for that really strange scholarship that is, you know, only for redheads that want to get into oceanography or something, you know, odd like that. You remember those things individually, but then you're also coming out with these blanket ideas on how to do things. And, you know, certainly neither of us are suggesting that, you know, we lower thresholds in any way or anything like that. But, you know, we are encouraging people to, you know, hey, let's make sure that we are doing the best we can to serve all of our students. And, you know, one of the things that I think about, you know, again, when we talk about groups, you look at rural areas and broadband is not as prevalent as it is in urban areas. So you have areas where, you know, you may not be able to get into your learning management system and watch a lecture or watch a video or participate because you don't have the bandwidth at home to be able to do that. And, you know, I can remember hearing answers of, well, go sit in the parking lot and do your work. And, you know, like, just imagine if we told people, you know, well, just go to the grocery store and sit in the parking lot because that's the only place you're going to be allowed to make your list for the things that you're going to buy or something like that. We wouldn't accept that as adults on our own being imposed with something like this. So why is it okay to do that to our students?
That's an excellent point. And when you bring up rural America, I live in North Dakota, northwestern North Dakota. The distances are humongous. And what you're going to have your students drive, some of them drive exceedingly long distances. There is no public transportation. Sometimes the entire family is sharing one vehicle. So there is no availability of busing. There's no availability of rail transportation. How do you want them to make it? And in winter, what you want them to sit in a car? I mean, let's stop and think about it. I also we're surrounded by First Nations reservations here, and the apprehension that many of them have toward your typical higher education. How are we addressing it, and how are we reaching out to tell them that, you know, we care for them and we want to support them. as opposed to the, you know, the white man coming in and wanting to bring them into the fold like we've done for the better part of the 19th and 20th centuries. So when we talk about the needs that students have, the list goes on, right? And the anxiety that we should have should ramp up. But many of us poo-poo it because what we want is a one-size-fits-all, because that's how it was in 19, whatever, when we went to school, because by God, I am not going to teach online, or I am all about rigor. Nobody gets an A in my class. As opposed to, right? Nobody's asking you to lower the standards. Nobody's wanting you to pass them just because, but teach them where they are. The question is not what do you think it is. The question is, what have you done to bring them to the point of completion? It's the gap that you're bridging. And sometimes the gap is bigger for one individual than it is for other individuals. That's equity.
Absolutely. So, Zahi, I think I'm going to go ahead and close out this program because that was an excellent way to end it. And we're going to talk about in our next segment some of the ways that we've missed, which we've been addressing, and how we fix that. So if you enjoy topics like this, be sure and subscribe to us here on YouTube. Ring that bell down below. You'll get a notification when we post new content. And of course, you can find Let's Talk Ed on all of your favorite podcasting platforms as well. So for Dr. Zahi Atala, I'm Chris Ford. We'll see you next time right here on Let's Talk Ed.